This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is the Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's Monday, the 15th of January. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and joining me today is
Frida Liu,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
And today we will be, Arvind will be talking in just a few minutes. He'll be talking about why healthcare is so expensive. And then later on, after the break, Frida, you'll be talking about why, if you're not spending 5 hours per week learning, you're wasting your time. You're being irresponsible. And I'll be talking about Facebook. They're about to change their news feed yet again, but this might be a good thing for us. And then because it's a Monday, we're going to share some events that will be happening this week and also throughout the later parts of the week in January as well. Now, Arvind, as we mentioned at the start of the show, you'll be talking about why healthcare is so expensive.
Yeah.
And I paid a lot of money for my healthcare bill last year.
So you would like to know why you had to pay so much for your healthcare bill.
It was very expensive. Thankfully, I had insurance to cover, but
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? Because if everyone says that you need to have insurance, otherwise you cannot afford private healthcare. So this piece came out from TechCrunch, and they were looking into like why healthcare is so expensive. It's mainly for the US, but it applies to overall. Like, it's just general logic kind of thing. The healthcare industry is weird because there's like so much talk of innovation and, you know, so many new technologies coming up and all,
but the med tech scene
the med tech scene, but then you never hear about reducing costs. It's also like it's equally hopeful but disappointing at the same time. So AngelList, they showed that there's almost 1,000 startups in the digital health space, and VCs invested $3.5 billion in digital health startups in the first half of 2017. Plus there are like dozens of these like health innovation talks in the US and all every year, right? But none of that has done what is like they're supposed to focus on, which is the biggest problem in healthcare, which is the cost. Healthcare in the US has never been more expensive. The US is spending about $3.5 trillion a year on healthcare expenses, which is an increase of 12,300% since
I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Never seen like a 5-digit percentage
increase since
1960.
That's not too far.
Not too far. Also, it's huge. And in the time frame, they said that healthcare spending increased from 5% of the US GDP to 17.5% of the GDP. The worst part is, despite all the spending, the age-adjusted mortality rate for Americans is only slowly declined every year since 1980. And to make it even worse, the life expectancy for people in the US, which is among the most typical metrics for measuring broad health and wellness outcomes, declined for a second year in a row in 2017.
So they're spending more and not living longer.
They're spending more, they're not living longer.
That's the short end of the stick that they got there, in that sense.
And they say that this is the effect of something called cost disease, which I will cover a bit later on, but just a bit, the Malaysian context for this. So as of last November, Malaysia's healthcare GDP is 3% lower than the standard World Health Organization recommendation. So we allocate about 4%, which is about 27 billion ringgit every year. The government would need to pump in an additional 20 billion to reach the standard 7%. And apparently 39% of all private medical healthcare expenditure is out-of-pocket spending. So it's not even covered by insurance. When you get admitted, 39%. Of
you all should remember this, Jeff.
I had insurance, so thankfully, like, you know, I was covered. Majority it was kind of covered by my insurance. I still had to pay a certain fee. You know, it's not like fully insured for a lot of things.
Yeah, but on average, if you get like 39%, that's like almost
that's a lot,
half.
Though. 40% of coming out from
So this boils down to something called cost disease. Cost disease is when the escalating cost of basic human services like healthcare, housing, education, construction, and infrastructure. So the dilemma is always offering better care versus offering more care to more people. And the logic is that you will have to sacrifice one to get the other. So if you offer more health care to more people, then the quality goes down. But if you offer less to a select group of people, then the expenditure goes up and the quality goes up equally. You know. But they say that this dilemma doesn't have to be the way, but none of the startups, most startups are not focusing on this part. Most entrepreneurs are trying to digitize like medical records. They're trying to improve operating room efficiency. They're making all these new robots to do surgery. But they are not, with all of this, the cost actually keeps going up. They're not solving the basic problem, right? So there is a solution, because some startups are starting to slowly tackle this problem. There is a startup called Avantgarde Health. It's trying to figure out why going into the hospital is so expensive. They say that one big reason is that hospitals and providers actually don't know what their costs are except for aggregated numbers. And I mean, people can roll their eyes at this and then they can say, how come you don't know? Because you know it has to be in your books, right? But apparently for things like construction and even the healthcare scene, getting exact costs is very, very, very difficult because their systems are not built to tackle such a thing. Their systems are from a time when not everything is to a point. So they aggregate the numbers. And their management systems are also not up to date. And they depend on the management systems and no one's bothering to fix that, right? So Avantgarde's solution is to use a technique called activity-based costing. So the idea is to assign every expense of an organization to the exact activity of that created the cost. So like let's say in like the healthcare scenario, like that example, no? Avantgarde uses time-driven costing to... They assign expenses to the treatment. So to understand for each patient what care is delivered, who delivered the healthcare, and how much time did they take into delivering that healthcare. So if we look at like a nurse, let's say like a nurse that comes and visits a patient, right? They need to assign exactly the time to that patient so that the true cost of the surgery can be calculated and analyzed after that.
Right.
Yeah. So like a nurse who spends 20 minutes in the room needs to assign 1/3 of their hourly rate to that patient. So you know exactly how much you're paying that nurse and how much each patient costs, instead of giving that patient like the lump sum bill that you always give them. Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of work for the hospital, but yeah, but Avantgarde says that they observe that the biggest drivers of cost and delivery of care is the volume of care itself, not the actual care that they're giving the people. So surgeons who conduct more surgeries have more experience, improving outcomes while also cutting the cost of each surgery because they divide their costs across many patients.
I see.
Yeah, compared to surgeons who do less surgeries, then one patient gets the bulk of the bill.
Ah.
Yeah, that's why it's like uneven. Some people get like charged more in the hospital, some people get charged less. And secondly, standardized treatment is also very, very important because, for example, Avantgarde worked with the Penn State Hershey Medical Center to improve efficiency of hip replacement surgery. So what they found is that different surgeons were using different hip components at different rates, increasing the total supply cost of the surgery itself. So if you get your supplies from multiple different providers, then you don't get it at lesser costs.
Right.
So some of them are ordering it from, just say, pharmaceutical A, and then the other one is from pharmaceutical B, and then C. The cost goes up, and then each patient gets charged different for, you know, whatever hip replacement they are getting, like the parts, right? Avantgarde wants to help hospitals understand that people are making decisions based on quality instead of the actual outcomes, because they are saying that the outcome is more important than the quality of the item that you're getting. Because if you go for a surgery and then you order something from somewhere, it doesn't matter what the cost of the item itself is. If the outcome is the same and you're able to get the same lifespan after that, like let's say, like even for hip replacement, let's say even the whatever they're ordering, if it has the same outcome, it doesn't matter what the quality or the brand of the part is. If you can do that, then you'll be able to reduce your cost. So they did this, and then they after giving the hospital their analytics and all that, they were able to reduce the cost per surgery of about $842.
Wow.
Yeah, by making no changes to the surgery itself. Minimal changes, just by changing the carrier and stuff, focusing on outcome, each surgery went down by $842.
Right.
But that's the story with all kinds of, you know, innovation. When we talk about how we reduce costs, the first thing is we need to lay out what are we spending on, right? And how much are we going to spend tomorrow or the next week or the next month. But for the healthcare scene, I guess it's difficult because how do you predict, you know, how many people are going to do a hip replacement surgery you know, some surgery and stuff. So, you know, they tend to, and then, you know, doctors have their own, of course, you know, some doctors have their own preferred brands that they would use. Like my mom last year went for a thing called an ICD, and, you know, there are three brands that, you know, give this device that would, you know, help to regenerate the heart if it stops, right? So you got to pick which brand you choose. And, you know, and I asked the doctors, like, you know, give me a cost breakdown. He's like, cost is really secondary here when it comes to this. It's like you just got to read up on, you know, which three brands you prefer. So, you know, it really, because there's just so many varieties, everyone wants to get into this, you know, medical space. It really is just listing it down and, you know, where we're going to spend this money.
And you didn't talk about pharmaceutical costs, huh? Not so much how much the medicines cost.
Yeah.
We didn't touch on that yet.
Because that's a whole different ballgame altogether, right? Because then you've got the whole IP with tablets and medicines, right? And that's why, you know, the whole TPPA had the whole hoo-ha about, you know, medical.
Because, this issue,
you know,
right?
The pills, you know, those tablets, you know, they are crucial here because the cost seems to be going up.
Yeah.
And it comes to this pill, so...
And it's also like when you rush someone to the hospital, let's say like that, in that situation, you don't care which hospital you're going to. And most of the time, if you're going to a private hospital and they need like immediate surgery, you're not going to experiment and go to like, oh, can I go to this government thing or this subsidized hospital and all. You're just going to incur the cost. And if your insurance doesn't cover it, then you end up with a bulk treatment cost that you cannot afford.
Anyways, we'll continue Enterprise Biz Bites in just a moment. Remember, you can get in touch with us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio if you've got any comments or any suggestions or any just sort of anything you want to add on to our conversation. It's at BFM Radio. This is I Want to Break Free from All the Financial Problems that the Medical Sector is Giving You by Queen, BFM 89.9.
Business-friendly Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Frida Liu and Arvin Yuvaraj. And if you can get in touch with us, it's at BFM Radio on Twitter. Frida, why do we need to be more like Bill Gates and Warren Buffet?
Okay, if you're not spending 5 hours per week learning, you're being irresponsible, boys.
She's pointing at us.
So this is an article that came out at QZ.com or QZ.com. So I like this. Why did the busiest person in the world, former President Barack Obama, read an hour a day while in office? Okay. Why has the best investor in history, Warren Buffett, invested 80% of his time in reading and thinking throughout his career? Why has the world's richest person, Bill Gates, read a book during his career? And why has he taken a yearly 2-week reading vacation throughout his entire career? I would have thought he'd gone skiing, but no.
Yearly 2-week reading vacation. That's a new one.
Okay. He says, so why do the world's smartest and business people find 1 hour a day for deliberate learning? So this is the 5-hour rule, while others make excuses about how busy they are. Okay. What do they see that others don't? And the answer is simple. Learning is the single best investment for time that we can make, or as Benjamin Franklin said, investment knowledge pays the best interest. And this is something that, you know, of Motivational Monday, and something I resonate with as well. So I have to ask, how many hours do you all spend learning?
Wow.
Depends what you define as learning.
Yes.
Watching DVDs, Wonder Woman DVD.
Watching a TED DVD
is probably fine.
Justice League doesn't count.
I know all these people talk about reading, right? But I think learning doesn't have to be, you know, you listen to a BFM podcast, you know.
YouTube is, I find, the best medium for learning anything. And people have started businesses just based on, you know, learning from YouTube videos, I guess, you know, a visual. Many different people have different ways of absorbing certain things, right?
Yeah.
One core way is reading. Reading is the core because you zone out and you focus into the book and you dive in. But, you know, today there's just so many distractions, right? So you got your phone keep buzzing, your mom or your friends, and everyone just keeps coming around and disturbing you. So reading becomes something that it's just so hard to get in. So hence we resort to videos, YouTube and stuff. So I don't know about like specific time, putting a number to it. Definitely a lot of YouTube videos that are educational. You know, I would say 60% is like the whole nonsense Stephen Colbert, and 40% would be educational videos.
You're learning something there as well. Yeah. This is really important, right? Because he says there, just dedicate yourself to constant learning. And it's very interesting because this morning I had this interview with the folks from Leadernomics. And what happened was that he said a lot of, if you're not constantly learning, right, your jobs will be affected. Now, so apparently there's this website, Will Automation Take Away My Job? So she said with HR and finance, something like that, you do a search, and she put HR, and she was also in finance, she said, and when she put down finance, it says in uppercase, you are doomed, !! She did, kindly did for me as well, for us as well, radio host, 10%, we are safe.
The website is willrobotstakemyjob.com.
yes, that one. So do a find out about that. And I think also one of the things is that what was very interesting here as well is that it's called demonetization. He said, when we don't have a time to learn something, it's usually because we're feverishly devoting our time to earning money.
Yeah.
But something is happening right now that's changing the relationship between money and knowledge. So this he calls it rapid demonetization, which technology is rendering previously expensive products and services much cheaper or even free. I'll read you this, right? Mm. There's this chart here. It comes from his book called Abundance, and he shows how we demonetize $900,000 worth of products and services in this US dollars that you might have purchased between 1969 and 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all technology that's now available on your phone.
Mm. So now it's just free, but we used to pay for these things,
this
right?
Is, okay, video conferencing used to be called Compression Labs VC,
mm-hmm.
and it would be $586,904. I remember these things, right? And now, of course, it's free on your WhatsApp or what have you. Your megapixel camera, obviously free on your phone.
Your phone, yeah.
What would be $3,000 to $6,000 for a Canon? Canon camera, right?
Mm.
What else do they have here? The digital voice recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me give you a big one. The GPS, right?
Yeah.
$279,366, which you used to at this cost, right?
Yeah.
It's free on your phone, right? It's called Waze, you know? So this is what happens here. So he says that this demonetization will accelerate in the future. Automated vehicle fleets will eliminate one of our biggest purchases, a car.
Yeah.
Okay, VR will make expensive experiences such as going to a concert or playing golf instantly available at much lower cost. And so, although the difference between reality and virtual reality is almost incomparable at the moment, the rate of improvement of VR is exponential. So these are things, and while education and health costs have risen, innovation in these fields will likely lead to eventual demonetization as well.
Yeah.
So,
hopefully.
Yeah, probably they'll bring the cost lower and lower.
Okay, so while goods and services are becoming demonetized, knowledge becoming increasingly valuable. And I think we just have to look at how our roles will evolve and whether these things will come to place. So we're not constantly learning. And I guess at the end of the day, constantly learning, constantly upskilling, constantly reskilling.
We're stuck in making the existing things that we're making to be cheaper and becomes to a point in time where it becomes free.
Mm. Yeah.
But then we're not helping our own selves here
because
it's that demonetization of the materials, right?
Wow.
Dematerialization in that sense, right?
And you look at all these things now just available on your phone, man. So he says that the moral story, those who work really hard through their career but don't take time out to schedule to constantly learn will be at the new at-risk group, okay? They risk remaining stuck at the bottom rung of global competition. They risk losing their jobs to automation, just as blue-collar workers did between 2000 and 2010 when robots replaced 85% of manufacturing jobs. I mean, you just look at touch and go, right? You don't find anybody working in a touch and go anymore.
Yeah.
So, these are things that we can visually see as well. So that's the thing. Constantly learn, constantly upskill, constantly reskill.
I like how they take time aside to read, because I still have two boxes from...
I'm old school. I'm a book person.
Yeah, but I have still boxes of from Big Bad Wolf 2014 or something that's still there, and it's
right
it's,
next to your DVD collection.
Yeah, right next to DVD collection is the books are changing color. If it was green before the color, now it's blue because it's been so long. And busy people, they put time aside to read and pick up new knowledge and all that.
Mm.
And we should. I mean, even now with I wanted to read the new book about Trump, Fire and Fury. Yeah, and I can do it with an audiobook. I can listen to it podcasts, and I just don't. With so much of technology, like you said, demonetization, it's free. I can do that. Mm. Just download the book. I don't even have to pick up a book anymore.
Yeah.
I should have read that by now. It's been out for 10 days.
Now, the thing is, it's true in that sense that, how these really successful and famous people really take some time off to read.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a quote here that, former President Obama perfectly explains why he was so committed to reading during his presidency in a recent New York Times interview. He said that at a time when events move so quickly and so much information is transmitted, reading gave him the ability to occasionally just slow down and get a perspective and the ability to get into someone else's shoes.
Mm. Yeah.
Those two things, he added, have been invaluable to him, and whether they've made him a better president, he doesn't really know, but what he can say is that they've allowed him to sort of maintain that balance during the course of 8 years, which is, because it's a better place in his mind.
Yeah.
It's not so frantic and busy.
Reflection.
It's just reflection, So reading a book helps him to do that.
So, if the busiest person in the world, the best investor in history, the world's richest person are reading or doing some learning, mm-hmm. I think we all should. Like,
yeah, why can't we?
There's
that's why we're not the richest.
there's a really good quote in the article towards the end that says, don't be lazy, don't make excuses, just get it done.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyways, we'll go for a short break. And when we come back, we will talk about Facebook. They're changing your news feed yet again. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with
Frida Liu,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
And it's the new year, and Facebook is going to change your news feed yet again. But this time around, the changes have been described as significant by industry watchers. So this is how it's going to work in, hopefully, in the next coming weeks. You're going to be seeing a lot more conversations between your family and friends instead of, you know, posts from businesses, brands and media. They will be less prominent. So content that sparks conversations amongst family and friends who use Facebook will be emphasized, according to Mark Zuckerberg on his Facebook post. And the changes, he said, will take effect over the coming weeks. He said that, you know, we've gotten feedback from our community that public content, posts from businesses, brands and media is crowding out the personal moments that lead us to connect more with each other.
Which was the original idea when he started Facebook, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't join Facebook to look at ads.
He said that, you know, he and his team, they felt a responsibility to make sure that Facebook was good for people's well-being. Yes, it's about time though, right? Mm-hmm. And another example was given in the Facebook by a separate post was live video feeds, which tend to generate much discussion, will be sort of, you know, pushed higher up into this algorithm, which I have a problem because how many of you here actually watch Facebook live videos?
Once in a while.
No,
yeah. I never have.
Never have?
Never have.
And even if you stumble across it, like you're scrolling through your Facebook newsfeed and you notice this live video feed, do you notice the amount of bots or spams that people would comment or send a like and a love, and it just keeps going on and on and then the comments are just random comments that don't make sense. So
watch full movie
buy this slimming product.
So I'm not sure if, like, you know, that was kind of like the feedback they pulled out because you know they're just looking at the stats, the numbers and the data and stuff, right? So they're not exactly looking at each person's comment. So I don't know if pushing live video is something that we really want, because I don't watch Facebook live video at all. So he's saying that, you know, he expect the time people spend on Facebook and some measures of engagement will go down, but he expect you to, the time you spend on Facebook will be more valuable, which he wants to. In a previous post, he said that Mark Zuckerberg said that he has vowed to fix Facebook in 2018. He said that he wanted to ensure that users were protected from abuse and that the time spent on Facebook will be time well spent. So a lot of people have came out on this. One has, you know, is Laura Hazard Owen from the Harvard University. She said that it's going to affect publishers a lot with these new changes. We're going to be seeing a lot less news or organically pop up articles in our news feed. She did say though, you know, Facebook had not been very clear about what sort of discussions the site revamp's algorithm would prioritize, which again, right? So it's great that you're coming out and say, oh, we're going to prioritize more, you know, engagement between family and friends.
But
can you define a little bit more? Because, you know, what is exactly, you know, definition
of family?
Yeah, because it might end up being the most controversial stuff that generated, you know, heated conversations that, you know, will be pushed up higher up into this algorithm. Because, you know, it might be an argument between two individuals, you know. It may be, you know, something that is of, you know, of a racism manner or you know, it might be one of those that get promoted in this algorithm, which would cause Facebook another different problem, a whole different set of problems, right?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff you see in your, I mean, for mine, the family WhatsApp groups is not something that you want to put publicly on Facebook. So it's stuff that you want to keep in WhatsApp, like isolate to one specific group. Yeah. So you see like these chain forwarded things about, you know, somebody did something, oh, there's a virus in the GIF from China or something. You don't want that stuff to be on Facebook, and you don't want people arguing amongst each other on in the Facebook comments. So
exactly,
that's not the content you want. You, have you seen Mad Max? the movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Frida, have you seen Mad Max?
Yes.
Yeah. So in Mad Max, they start somewhere, then they go all the way to the end, and then they take a big U-turn, and then they come back to the place where they started. So that's what Facebook is doing. They start somewhere, and now they took like this whole 5-year plan thing, and now they're going back to where they started.
Who said you can't learn from movies, Frida?
Right,
who said you can't learn from movies?
They're
there
basically
you go.
Just going back to the point where they started with the whole post your own individual stories kind of thing. I mean, we didn't ask for Facebook to have ads in their videos. Yeah. I'm watching a video, 30 seconds, they're like, oh, ad starting now. You know?
And I immediately just skip the whole video.
Yeah, yeah, because I can't wait like 30 seconds for like a milk powder ad to finish for me to watch like the punchline in a joke, right?
Because the video, it's another 10 seconds before the video ends, but then you're going to shove me another 30 seconds of commercial in between. You know, why would I even want to watch this video anyways?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of, in a way, a lot of people saying like, this is Facebook getting back to its roots, you know, making your news feed more about what your friends are creating and thinking rather than just, you know, sharing the articles that they have, you know, read. Or, well, you know, that's also debatable.
Yeah,
right?
Have
they actually read the article? You know, for the first time, Mark Zuckerberg is making a major decision that goes against one of his long-held beliefs that any change to the network must have a goal of improving engagement. This move, he concedes, will likely lead to people spending less time on the site. Which, you know, in a way, 2017 was, you know, fake news in Facebook. And I guess, you know, this could be probably one of the ways where, you know, you could get, you know, avoid from being caught in a scandal or a clickbait article. So the less time you spend on Facebook, maybe the less time you'll unearth some of this.
You spend some of that time learning.
But I think Facebook recognizes, I think, that they are going through a problem, because I've, like, for my own personal habits, my own personal habits, the last year, I've reduced using Facebook a lot. Like, I check it maybe once a week just to post something about a movie that I've seen or whatever. I just put it up and that's it.
Yeah.
That's basically it. I hardly scroll because there are too many ads, too many brand pages, and I've like lost interest.
So news organizations and publications, this thing might spell bad news for you, because a lot of traffic these days come from Facebook, right? So with less prominence, expect some viral sites to very quickly go out of business. The new change, of course, will cost Facebook money. Zuckerberg warned investors at the end of last year that combating fake news would hurt the firm's bottom line. But the question is, we just don't know how much Facebook are bleeding at this point of time. So yeah, interesting times. They're going back to their roots. Hopefully, you know, it will allow us to, you know, get on Facebook again, because I've kind of stopped my Facebook behavior as well. So because it's just too annoying. It's just too noisy.
There's too much. There's just too much going on. Yeah.
So who could disrupt Facebook? What could disrupt Facebook?
Oh, if someone's watching it and then they see this gap, big opportunity.
Definitely. You know, for news, and publications, I resort to Flipboard. Flipboard is my go-to for getting news, because, you know, I don't get any of, like, today I ate this amazing instant noodle for, you know, dinner, and I'm like, you know, why is this part of my news feed? Like, you know, so if you want a news feed, Flipboard is my go-to thing. Anyways, we'll go for a short break. When we come back, we will share with you some of the events that are happening around town. You're listening to The Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9. It is The Enterprise Biz Byte, and it's the Monday, so it's events time. What's happening, Frida?
Okay, tomorrow from 1:30 to 4 p.m., this is the 2018 Site C E-Commerce Class 101, the E-Tail Process. So this is a series of seminars aimed at increasing the e-commerce know-how for small and medium enterprises. I think this would be really good. There's forums and discussion panels with successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. So there's Adrian Oh, co-founder of EC Insider. Who should attend? E-commerce players, internet solution providers, SME retailers who wants to go from, you know, offline to online, chain stores, right? So this is free. You can RSVP on PTIX. So again, it's 1:30 to 4 p.m. at Selangor Digital Creative Center in Shalom. I didn't know there was this place.
If you're interested in e-commerce space, also just stay tuned, because we have something boiling in the pipelines as well. Hint, all right. Anyways, for those who are interested in the programming, well, Lara Talks is a session where passionate developers, they share interesting tricks of the trade, hacks, lessons, and expertise about Laravel, P PHP and also the web development in general. This is happening on the 17th of January at 8 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. at the KPMG Tower in Bandar Utama. Lara Talks number 13. Everyone is welcome, including students, but keep in mind that this is a very developer-centric meeting, specifically on PHP and Lara level. So if you're curious on how to build scalable web applications, or if you find it hard to keep up with the pace of the fast-paced world of the World Wide Web, and you want to learn what Laravel has to offer, so you can just sign up. Tickets, again, are free, but you got to RSVP on PTIX.
Yeah. There's also something happening on Saturday, 20th January. It's something called Unstoppable Summit. It starts at 8:30 in the morning, ends at 6 in Munaru 1 in Mon Kiara. This is an event by Brand Yourself Agency. So Unstoppable Summit aims to bring you a powerful, highly interactive and insightful event. They say it's packed with knowledge, experience and insider secrets directly from the top players in the marketplace. They have a panel of speakers comprised of successful entrepreneurs, industry experts and seasoned mentors. Some of the speakers include Chui Ling from School of Charisma, Steve Wee, the founder of Brand Yourself, and Datin Winnie Liu, who is from A Cut Above, and six other founders and entrepreneurs. Tickets are 98 ringgit, and you can RSVP on eventbrite.com.
All right, that kind of wraps up this episode of Biz Bytes. And at the start of the show, if you missed, if you're just tuning in, you can download the podcast. And if you want to know what we talked about at the beginning, Arvin, you talked about?
Yeah, so I spoke about why healthcare is so expensive and how some startups are finally starting to tackle that problem.
And Frida?
If you're not spending 5 hours per week learning, you're being irresponsible.
I talked about how Facebook is going to change your news feed. If you're a consumer, this is good news for you. If you're a news organization or a media outlet or a brand, this is bad news for you. And then, of course, we wrapped up events. If you missed any parts of the show, you can download the podcast. It's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. We're also CarPlay enabled. Now, coming up at 1 o'clock is the Breakfast Grill replay in the lead up to the 14th general election. The Morning Run crew, they dive deep into the issues and sentiments affecting a large segment of the electorate, which is the youth voters. So you can catch Zaidil Baharuddin from Barisan National Youth and also debater Syed Saddiq Syed Abdul Rahman to hear more about how both sides of the political divide are planning to appeal to the youth of the nation. You've been listening to the Enterprise Biz Bytes. On behalf of Arvin, Frida and myself, Jeff Sandhu, have a lovely Monday. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.